Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 6:11 in the morning, 720 WGN, and on this rainy Monday morning, Steve Cochran reporting live from the monsoon of 2017. Yeah,
live from monsoon 2017. We have team coverage?
Yes.
Actually, I'm the only one on the team that is in the monsoon at this time.
We're looking at it. We can see the monsoon from here.
We're worried about you too, by the way.
I've taken cover underneath Michigan Avenue on, you know, Lower Wacker. And I may just hang out here. These people seem friendly. You know, we're talking finance right now in regards to one of them wondering if I had any money. But yeah, this is hard. I don't know. Mary Vanderbilt can speak to this because she has to keep track of this. She drives around with a rain gauge on top of her car in storms like this. This is as hard a rainstorm as I've driven through in, you know, 20 years in Chicago, or 25 or whatever it's been.
It's crazy. Mary's buried in the woods, but Susan is completely on top of everything. Even caught a little cold on the way in, poor thing.
I did.
She caught cold this morning while she was driving?
In the rain.
Absolutely, because it was raining. So you need to be careful.
That is crazy. You know, normally if it's drizzled, everybody drives slow and my head explodes, but in today's case, you should drive slow, and it's kind of ugly. So just be advised that it's going to be kind of ugly. If I believe what Vic says, and he's not Donald Trump, so I do, the storm system's going to be around until 9:30 or 10, and then, as he said, could get ugly again later this afternoon. So let's all cuddle together. We'll be fine.
Yes.
And I'll see you in studio in about 2 minutes.
That sounds good. Be safe, Steve. And just in case you were worried or wondering, this is going to be a bad hair day. Got a lot of humidity out there, too.
Not in my case. Any day with hair is a good hair day.
There you go. All right, that's the great Steve Cochran. He'll be here momentarily. But, yeah, what a lightning storm over the lake this morning.
Yeah, it's still going.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going. And I know the storms have been pretty... for periods, have been pretty intense. So
yeah, and watch that standing water too. It's not too bad yet, Susan, is it? I mean, could this be a messy?
It could be a very messy commute. Roads are slick. We're getting reports of spin outs, not lane blockage, not too many delays so far. But in a few areas, there are roads closing because of flooding under a viaduct. We're starting to hear of issues of that sort.
All right.
I think the bigger issue is going to be the frizz, because I just noticed mine is like frizzed now. It's starting to frizz.
I call it the Monica hair. Remember that Friends episode where they went to the Bahamas and Monica's hair frizzed out? It's a Monica hair day.
That was some big hair.
You know, I got to say, the men on the show, Steve Grzanich and Dave Bennett, Mike Jacobson, you guys have nice hair.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You really do.
Thank you.
I know you take pride in your hair.
Mine's not too frizzy.
No, you put a little product in there, a little hair gel going on. Jakey's got nice hair. He wears a hat a lot. But
yes, he does. I saw a picture of him over the weekend without a hat.
Oh, I did too. Yeah. A little smoochy picture.
Yeah, the first time I saw Mike without a hat on, I didn't know who it was.
Yeah. I think he gets that a lot.
I've had that with two people here, Bill Leff and Mike Jacobson. When I saw them without a hat for the first time, I didn't know who they were.
And I think it was both at one of the WGN Walk of Fame inductions.
Could have been.
Gotta
yes.
be a little bit dressier.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
I look at it as I get up at about first news goes off at 2:50 a.m.
Uh-huh.
So, and then I get here usually around 3:45-ish, 4-ish. So I think wearing a hat's okay. I don't think I need to impress too many people.
No, I think if you arrive here with pants and socks and on shoes, I think that's all we care about.
You're right.
Okay, I would hope.
I like how we have the pants. Yeah.
If you're lucky enough to do that in the morning, getting up that early, you're fine.
Shirt is optional, Mikey, but as long as you got the pants, the socks, and the shoes, that's all.
Well, there was a day last week with Grzanich, so let's just say he could have been a little more covered. He might have forgotten a portion of his dressing.
What'd you forget, Steve?
His pants.
Yeah, you did not.
Yeah.
No way.
No, I didn't. He's making that up.
See, we
see now that's how rumors start, Mike.
Maybe they were short shorts, like the Daisy Dukes.
Besides, I have emergency pants here just in case.
Do you really have emergency pants?
In the car, I do, yeah.
In case you spill something?
In case I spill something or have to go somewhere fancy.
I think that's good. I think that's nice. You got to have a backup pair of pants. Yeah. You don't tell me, Annette, you don't have backup pants.
I don't.
Come on.
No, I don't.
I bet if I went to your office right now, you have backup pants.
No, I have my workout stuff's there. So I guess I do.
Mark Harmon from our sports department always keeps a suit in the back of his car.
Oh, in case he has to do TV, maybe.
Or whatever, yeah. He always has a suit. And I'm assuming it's wrinkled, but he has a suit in the back of his car.
In case he meets a lady.
I also have a pair of boots and a hard helmet in my car.
There it is. His NATO gear. That would be Steve Grzanich at WGNRadio.com. All right, at 6:16, we will have the top 6 at 6 coming up next, but let's check the roads with Susan. How's it going out there?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Let's do this differently. Let's go the best news first, and then let's go to the stuff we have to talk about, okay? So good news first.
Yeah.
Item number one, Iraq declaring victory in Mosul. If Iraq wins in Mosul, that means our allied forces and our men and women who have put together this plan and have assisted and fought alongside our victors as well. The campaign to liberate the country's second largest city from the Islamic State lasted nearly 9 months. It was expected to be much longer. Thousands of bad guys died. Nearly a million of people had been displaced. They're now trying to figure out how to give them homes again and make them as comfortable as possible in a terrible time. But Mosul was the home office for ISIS, and now they're on the run.
Yeah, good thing.
The cockroaches, the lights are on, and this is a very big deal. Now, this should not get buried by the other news of the day, but it will to some extent. It's important, though, that you know that Mosul wants the lead item every day because these are real human lives on the line. These are real people who are living and dying. Mosul is a win, so congratulations there. And David Ross is back on the field. Let's go live to Dave in Kansas. Are you in Kansas? Where are you?
Well, actually, yeah, I guess I would be in Wichita, Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Who are the Kansas Stars?
The Kansas Stars are an independent baseball team.
Bunch of ex-big leaguers.
I guess there's a bunch of former major leaguers, and David Ross tweeted out yesterday that he's back and he's going to play for them.
You know, once you play hardball, Dave, as we call it, once you play the old fast pitch, you know, you can't necessarily get it out of your system.
You got that bug.
When you haven't had the wiffle ball welts for years, I know I just kind of take a bat occasionally and just smack myself in the thigh.
But see, here's a guy whose final game was Game 7 of the World Series, and he hit a home run.
You can't say that that's as exciting as the Kansas Stars.
No, I guess you can't.
Yeah.
Or Dancing with the Stars.
This is just guys having fun, right? Isn't it? This is just guys out there, old guys having a good time, right?
I think it's like a beer league.
Yeah, I think so. They're set to play in the National Baseball Congress World Series. I don't know what that is either.
Will that be in Grant Park with the slow pitch softball?
16-inch baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all in the Wichita Eagle. Jake, is my subscription to the Wichita Eagle run out? It's normally where I get most of my news.
Just renewed it.
Okay, excellent. Good news for me. And Mayor made news over the weekend in a lot of different ways. A bunch of victories with the last special legislative session that could be favorable to the city. Pension reforms being passed. Money from a 911 phone fee increase. And lawmakers' approval of an education spending plan. There could be more money for Chicago public schools. But one thing we're definitely going to talk about this week is a plan called No Plan, No Diploma. Mm-hmm. Where if a city public school kid graduates without a job, without a specific plan for a gap year, without admission to college, and by the way, without a job meaning a promise or an offer of a job, without a plan, they don't get a diploma.
Right.
And all of this is to force kids to think about their future and not just drift, not just run out the clock to the end of high school. And I love this plan.
Yes, I do too.
Favorably reviewed in the Washington Post. As a matter of fact, I believe today. And we spoke to the mayor's people over the weekend, and we expect that the mayor will be on with possibly the CPS school chief to talk about this. There are some people going, well, you can't keep a diploma from a kid that's earned it. It's not the point of this.
No.
The point of this is to encourage kids to think about it. And as long as there is some sort of appeal process for special circumstances, you know, there's a lot of things you may not necessarily think of about why a kid may or may not have a plan after high school. It could be medical reasons, could be whatever. Then why, what's wrong with this? This is a good thing.
It is a good thing. The pension reform and the 911 votes, those overrode vetoes by Rauner. So those are going forward. The education bill is still being held by the Senate.
No plan, no deployment. By the way, you guys are all on the same plan. Starting with you, Grzanich. No plan for after the show at 10, no diploma.
Yeah, I think I might be the one out on this that doesn't like this at all. I think it's a good idea, but I don't know that you can keep a diploma away from somebody who's earned it.
Why?
Well, you've...
It's your diploma until you get
it. It is, but, you know, you've earned that, and if some kids work very, very hard to graduate from high school...
So then why don't they have a plan?
Well, maybe they don't have a plan because there's not a plan available. I mean, that's the other thing, too. You've got to make plans available for all these kids. There's a lot of kids that don't have plans even within their grasp, even if they wanted a plan.
Well, then that's where the appeal process, as I mentioned, should be a part of it, if that, in fact, is the case. But if you have a job or an offer for a job, there's no reason that by the time you get out of high school that you can't have, again, barring special circumstances, a plan. Something that you plan on doing with your life.
Well, as long as it's just a plan and not, because if you, what is a plan? I think that's either part
of
the
question. Well, what they said, you've read the story, right?
Right, I have read, yeah.
Yeah, so the story is either a job offer, a college admission, a gap year plan, and I don't know the specifics of the gap year plan, but it's pretty broad. It's basically saying don't sit on your ass on a couch. Have something that you plan on doing so you can further your life.
Yeah. There's a demographic of young men, especially black men, who do not have the kinds of jobs available. There's not those opportunities. And I think that has to be addressed in a more meaningful way. I mean,
well, I don't know that it hasn't been. I don't think, I mean, yeah, we'll
find
out.
I think it is being addressed, but I think more needs to be done on that area.
Yeah,
otherwise that unemployment rate wouldn't be so high.
Yeah, but it's not just black kids; it's white kids. It's kids sitting around too. I understand what you're saying about impoverished neighborhoods, but there's a lot of poor white kids out there as well who could sit around and not do anything. It's choices. It's choices that you make. You don't have to know what you're going to do with the rest of your life. You have to know what you want to do at 18. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's too much to ask. Next, approximately 40 diamondback turtles migrated across the runway at JFK and stopped all air traffic for a period of time yesterday.
Did you see the pictures of this?
I did not.
It's very funny. It's cute.
Who do you think the first businessman was? He goes, run him over. I got to get home.
Right.
These 40 diamondback turtles, of course, they're turtles. There is no express lane for turtles. They're going to take as long as they're going to take in their migration. I'll stay back here while Jim marches the turtles across the runway.
It's cute.
This happens every year, so they actually have dedicated staff to turtle corralling and moving there at JFK.
They have turtle people?
Yep, they have turtle people.
It's funny because they have rats at LaGuardia, so I wonder how they help them migrate.
People say that why doesn't the planes just run them over? Well, one of those turtles just happened to bounce up into an engine on takeoff. That would not be a good scene.
I don't think turtles bounce, do they?
No, but if you hit one with a wheel.
If you sucked one into the engine?
Yeah.
That would be
bad. There's a
bunch
of them there.
Think how bad that would be for the turtles.
They're pregnant, so you can't be doing anything to them. They have to just wait for them to walk.
Yeah. And you can enjoy the moment. Everybody should just pause. Pause on your plane at JFK, look out the window and go, it's nature right there in front of
me. I mean, how long could it take them to cross the runway?
2 hours. Some of them were taking 2 hours. I personally would.
One of them stopped at a Sbarro. Just to get some pizza.
In the terminal?
Yeah.
You get a Cinnabon.
Yeah.
One of them was actually carrying luggage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that was me.
40 of them. How do you think they go to O'Hare?
Well, since we're already so great when it comes to delays, I'm not quite sure.
We'd have a spokesperson coming out saying no comment.
We stop for geese. Stop for geese on the road?
Yeah. And they have goats out there,
yes,
too, eating
do,
the grass.
Steve.
No, go, what? Go.
They
oh,
have goats.
Goats. Yeah, but the goats aren't on the runway.
No.
No, the goats
are
smart.
You stop for geese, though.
Oh, no, I'll hit a goose.
No, you won't.
Yeah,
on the golf course, you will.
Well, they can't. They're generally faster than the carts if you're in a golf team. When Harry Reid left the Senate, I thought, okay, good. Here is one of the worst people to ever serve in the Senate who's going to go away. A bad, bad, bad guy. And then Mitch McConnell came along and proved that he's just as big a jerk. Bipartisan jerkdom. Now, Mitch McConnell over the weekend seemed to have the cold wash of reality splashed over his face and now says, hey, look, yeah, we might have to fix Obamacare. And he got that look on his face like, oh, we got to work with Democrats. Like he was just being forced into a root canal without any sort of anesthesia. or Novocaine or anything.
What a great analogy.
I would like the pain relief of this Congress for me. So today, all the senators return back to work. Congress is back in session. I think they're going to work for 3 or 4 days in a row here. I'm sure they'll be winded by the end of the week.
McCain said, too, yesterday on Face the Nation that he thinks it's dead.
Yeah.
Completely DOA.
What does he know? 80-year-old McCain. He's only been around the Senate for 35 years. And finally this, President Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr. Not helping, son. Not helping. Donald Trump Jr. initially said, never met with Russians. Don't even know what a Russian looks like. What's a Russian? I couldn't even spell Russian. Then he was outed by the New York Times for meeting with a Russian, allegedly Kremlin-connected lawyer. And he said that the meeting was about Russian adoption. Because, as you could imagine, last June, weren't we all talking about Russian adoption last June? Wasn't that all on the tip of our tongues? What are we going to do about Russian adoption, which was shut down by Putin a few years ago? He alleges, this is the part that's absolutely ridiculous, he alleges that he dragged Paul Manafort and the son-in-law, Kuchar, to this meeting, and none of them knew who they were meeting. Mm-hmm. All right, how many times in your life have you gone to a meeting where you didn't know who you were meeting? How do you know who you're meeting? You walk into a restaurant, go to every table. Are you the person I'm meeting with? Are you the person I'm meeting with? Are you the person I'm meeting with? So that's nonsense. They had no idea who they were meeting. And they said they sat down, and then Donald Trump Jr. responded to additional reporting by the Washington Post by saying, we were told this person had damaging information on Hillary Clinton.
Right.
That's the part that's a problem.
But we didn't get any of the information.
We didn't get any, so obviously we were frustrated.
Yes.
So we talked about Russian adoption, yes, and then we left. Look, you can call this amateur hour. You can call this idiot son doesn't know when to shut up. This, by the way, is a guy that's supposed to be just focused on the family business. Whatever the case may be, this is Christmas morning for a guy like Bob Mueller again, because it saves a lot of time in this investigation, because you can now go directly to these various sources. That on top of the fact that Trump had to backtrack on his cyber idea over the weekend, as I said, giving Vladimir Putin a cyber commission you're going to plan and sponsor and work with him is, well, it's like somebody breaks into your house and you go, hey, change the locks while you're in there. You see Trump calling Putin going, I need the password. What's the password? I don't speak Russian.
Jeez. You can't make it up.
Just ridiculous.
It does get more and more interesting every single day.
Absolutely. What's coming up?
Oh, big story.
Big story.
With Trump and a G20 recap.
Good. Because you've got plenty to talk about. And then Dr. Most on 720 WG. And this is all sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
I have edema on my thigh. Pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Every Monday, the best in medical information.
I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now. He's from Central DuPage Hospital. Call Dr. Most right now.
Dr. Kevin Most, who played golf yesterday with Larry Wirt, guy that runs his company. You played with Larry before, haven't you, Kev?
Yeah, actually in the Invitational at Butterfield.
Yeah, big tournament out there.
Kevin Butler, yeah.
Larry Wirt is sneaky long. Now, one of the things he does, it's a mind game. He does this is how you get to the top of the broadcasting business. He was a diver. Did you know that? Larry was almost an Olympic diver?
No.
Yeah. So he will wear the Speedo on the golf course. He'll come out in the Speedo. And granted, he can pull it off, but he'll come out in the Speedo. And honestly, Kev, you know, it's hard to chip and putt when you're looking at that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Did you guys win?
We did, yes. We didn't play well, but we had a couple of very well-placed birdies, and Larry makes birdie on 17 to pretty much end it and demoralize the other Billy Mullins and John Corvino. So,
and that's really what it's all about. If you're not ruining an no-hitter, or breaking the pinata at a kid's birthday party, ruin your friend's day on the golf course. Come on, that's what being a boy is all about.
Well, and John Corvino and Larry are very good friends, and the match is going back and forth, and Larry's getting crushed, and we're getting crushed. But I'll tell you, a couple well-placed birdies, and
it's all over.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Yep.
And that's good, because Larry needs the money. So I'm glad that you guys are so able to win a little cash. All right, we got a letter from a listener. Annette says, could Dr. Most discuss shingles? Why is it affecting so many younger people? Everyone assumes that if given a shingles shot after age 60, maybe it was good forever, but now I'm hearing maybe 5 or 6 years. personal experience. I had the shingles shot in 2009. I got a full-blown case of it 2 weeks ago, which would be, what, 8 years later. Vaccinations have been discussed many times. But where are we at with this, Doc? I don't want shingles.
No, you know, and no one does. And it is interesting. It's it's always good to hear from listeners, too, about what they want to hear about, to be honest with you.
Yeah, sure.
We appreciate the call. But shingles, we have to realize that the vaccine for shingles is not that old. Matter of fact, it's about, 10, 11 years old, 2006, 2007 it came out. So it's still in its infancy as far as how effective it's going to be and whether we're going to need boosters in that. But people have to realize that if you had chickenpox, you have a chance for shingles because the chickenpox virus is living in our bodies right now. And when we get immunocompromised or we get weakened, it's going to pop out and you're going to get this awful, painful disease, shingles, which Dave Bennett had, Dave, 5-6 years ago?
Oh, more than that, yeah, like probably 15 years ago.
Show us on the anatomically correct Dave Bennett poster we keep here in the studio where the shingles virus broke out.
Shingles virus, I had a rash, not an edema on my thigh, I had a rash on my thigh.
All right. How about your bikini line? Did you have it along your bikini line?
A little below that.
Ooh,
and so I went...
Good.
To the dermatologist, thinking it was
who
a rash.
Who said, don't come in here with that
nonsense.
They
said, oh, that's,
we don't want to
that's
see that.
Shingles. Go see your doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you do for it, Doc, once you get it?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is to try to not to get it because there's no treatment for it to make it go away. And the bad thing about it is shingles, the virus follows one nerve. So once we see where it is, we know where it's going to go, how far it's going to go, and where it's going to spread to. It stays on one side of the body because it's just following one nerve. The bad thing about shingles, and this is especially true in seniors, is that nerve gets inflamed. And even after the virus, after the rash goes away, you can still have very debilitating pain along that same nerve. And that's the big thing is we don't want to get, the rash is uncomfortable, as Dave knows, and it's painful. But the bigger thing is we don't want people to get this pain that stays for weeks or months after the virus is gone.
I've heard yes and no to this question, Doc. Is it contagious whether or not you have had chicken pox or not?
Correct. Well, when the virus is there and the rash is there and you have the pustules, yeah, that should be covered and you shouldn't be around anybody who's immunocompromised. If you rub up against somebody, you're going to get shingles, no. Chances are you won't. But it still is live virus there and you definitely could. So I'd stay away from anybody who has it.
And what's the general description of immunocompromised?
Well, it can be someone who's on chemotherapy. It can be someone who has cancer. It can be someone who has diabetes. Can somebody who has a bad diet and is under a lot of stress. Any of those are going to impact your immune system to decrease it, which is going to allow the shingles virus to start to replicate.
All right. Walgreens certainly publicizes their shingles vaccine well. I assume the CVS clinics do the same thing. You can get these, obviously, at all the Northwestern facilities. But what do you recommend people do?
Well, yeah, if you're over the age of 60, get it. And someone says, oh, you know what? Here, Dave Bennett's perfect example. Over the age of 60, and he had shingles. He goes, oh, I already had shingles. I'm not going to get it. No, you can get the vaccine even if you've had shingles. So anyone over the age of 60, please get the vaccine. Now, it's
but what about you and I? You can see, well, we're not anywhere close to that, but we can see it from here.
Sure.
Is it too early for us?
Well, it is probably too early for us as far as we could probably go and get it, but we'd have to pay for it, and insurance wouldn't cover it at our age. But the listener also had a very interesting comment. We're seeing this more and more in 30, 40, and 50-year-olds.
Well, that's why I'm wondering.
Yeah, and it's because of we're under a lot of stress at times, we're not eating well, we're not sleeping well, so those times it's going to pop out. But getting the vaccine, the medical indication for it is over the age of 60 at this point.
So insurance won't touch it. What's it cost if you pay cash?
I don't know. That's a great question. You know, the nice thing about it is if you have Medicare Part D, because we have a lot of baby boomers right now, if you have Medicare Part D, it's covered, by Medicare.
Can you guys see if you can find out what it costs if you pay cash for the shingles vaccine? Because I know people will ask offline. All right, so there's not a lot we can do to prevent it other than to go out and get the vaccine. What about people who think they have it? What do you do?
Yeah, if you think you have it, definitely get in to see your doctor because we're trying to explain. And I can tell you this is very classic for us. Someone will come into the office and I'll look at them and they say, I have this terrible pain in my back. And I'll look at their back and nothing. And I'm sitting there going, wow. And did you lift anything? Did you do anything? No. those are the people that are say, get ready. This is probably going to be shingles. In a couple of days, you're going to see the outbreak of the rash. So get the pain first, then the rash. So for those people, you're going to say, stay away from your spouse if they're older. Stay away from any young kids. Cover it whenever you're out. And then really, it's going to be, what are we going to do for pain management? Anti-inflammatories initially, and try to stay away from the opiates, but we may need to go to opiates just to take care of some of that pain.
We'll take a break. We'll come back, and Doc will educate us on vaccinations in general in just a moment, and also take us down a Wikipedia history lane of where vaccines came from. We didn't always have vaccinations. They had to start somewhere. And Doc's great-great-great-grandpa, Dr. Jedediah Most, was there when it first happened.
We interviewed the family of Henrietta Lacks for TV. They were in town speaking on Friday. That's fascinating. With the HeLa cells?
I don't know anything about this.
Fascinating story.
It's really cool. It's how it's basically led to a cure for polio, advances in chemotherapy, right, Doc, and in vitro fertilization.
It's a sad story, but I mean, Henrietta Lacks cells are being used to this day. Her family was never compromised, or was compromised minimally, but pharmaceutical companies have made billions and billions of dollars off of the cells. So,
what's the pneumonia vaccine, the flu vaccine? Obviously, we're talking about the shingles vaccine, the bad show vaccine, where if you get it before the show starts, you won't do a bad show. All those coming up. Stand by. More with Dr. Kevin Most and his wingman, Larry Wirt. It's 6:53. Traffic now. Where is Mary? Is she stuck in the woods in Wisconsin?
I think that she's...
Boy, you don't feel good, do you?
Oh, I'm just fine. I'm happy to be here. My voice just isn't at its peak. So.
Well, we're glad you're here as well, but I can tell you don't feel great.
Yes, I appreciate that. Maybe Dr. Most should help me. I don't know.
Well, don't push it. You're only here this week.
Exactly.
All right, what's going on with the curse?
I killed it.
Dr. Kevin Most, where'd vaccines come from? Who did the first vaccination?
Yeah, it's a very cool story if you think about it. There was a physician, Dr. Edward Jenner, an English physician, and he noted that the milkmaids who got cowpox from the cows never got smallpox. And at this time in the world, right at 1800, 400,000 people were dying from smallpox every year. So what he did is he convinced his gardener to allow him to inoculate his son, little James Phipps, with cowpox. And he did that, and the guy got a case of cowpox, and 2 months later, 3 months later, he then inoculated him with smallpox, and the kid survived. Now, smallpox in children was almost 100% fatal. So that gardener had a lot of faith in Jenner.
And I'd say, take my kid.
Exactly. You think about that. But here's a guy that said, I think I've got this figured out. And he was kind of ridiculed for a few years, but look at the impact that it's made now. And people say, well, why is it called vaccination? Jenner made the word up because of the cowpox causing this. The Latin word for cow is vaca.
There's no specific medical root to it. It's just that's where it came from the origin story.
Correct.
Well, that is an interesting deal.
Right. I always thought the Greeks invented vaccinations, but...
You think the Greeks invented everything. is the pneumonia vaccine something we ought to be doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the pneumonia vaccine, and people call it the pneumonia vaccine, and it's a bacterial vaccine, so it's good because it covers us against bacterial infections. And it's not just pneumonia. This bacteria can cause meningitis, it can cause blood infections, so it's really important. And these are for people over the age of 65. There are two different vaccines, and it's very important that you get them in the right order, for one thing, and that they get them at the right timing. So there's one vaccine that you get first, the PCV13. That covers you for 13 different strains of this bacteria. And then the second vaccine is another one, the PPSV23, which is going to cover you for even more strains. You can't get them both at the same time. It's important to get the PCV13 first. And then the timing of the second one, discuss it with your physician. Some people will get it a little bit quicker. Other people may wait up to a year before getting the second.
What about the flu?
Very important.
What about the flu vaccine?
Flu vaccine, every year we're going to get it. We're going to hopefully hit it on the head. And that's another thing about vaccines. People say, I got the vaccine. How could I get this? We have to realize that vaccines are not 100% effective. A lot of different things come into it. One is your immune system. How well was your immune system when you got the vaccine?
That's a pretty safe bet, though. I don't want people to get scared off by it because the research that you do in the field and what you guys know in the vaccination business, you've got a much better shot of not getting the thing if you do the vaccine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I would tell people if you've ever had influenza, and again, looking at seniors, influenza for young, healthy people is 10 days of inconvenience. Influenza for seniors can be life-threatening.
Yeah. Big time. I was completely schooled on the flu vaccine by you guys.
Yeah.
Because I believed a lot of those myths.
You've manned up.
I have.
Yeah.
I've womaned up.
And Andrea, you are going to be so excited because you just wait. They're testing something right now where you don't have to get a shot.
Oh, yes.
We just put this little Band-Aid on you with these little micro needles that you don't even notice.
Wait, what? Needles?
Yeah.
Micro needles. No, you don't even notice them.
You don't even notice them. It's like a Band-Aid.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
I think it sounds really neat.
No, it is really cool. And actually, it's so cool that those don't need to be refrigerated. So now we're talking about taking vaccines to parts of the world for other illnesses that...
that is a big deal.
Could be amazing, yeah.
That's a big deal. Yeah. The Tdap vaccine?
Tdap is very important. I mean, that's one, if you think about it, we say, oh, make sure you get your tetanus shot every 5 years, 10 years, depending if you stepped on a rusty nail. And now we put pertussis back into that vaccine. And it's because we thought we were all protected with pertussis with our childhood vaccines, but we found all these outbreaks of whooping cough. Now, whooping cough can be treated, but our big concern, and you'll see it in... where we try to make sure every newborn father is immunized. We try to make sure the grandparents are immunized because anybody who's going to be around a newborn who couldn't fight off whooping cough, that's one of our biggest concerns. So anybody that's out there planning families, make sure you get your Tdap and grandparents as well. But pertussis is not a lot of fun to have, but like I said, we can treat it in healthy adults.
Shingles, again, 60 and over. And as always, for those of you who have been bamboozled by this nonsense that vaccines cause autism in babies. It doesn't. It hasn't. It won't. And please spread the word that that's complete nonsense and a myth.
Absolutely.
Thanks, bud.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
See you later. Dr. Yep. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. News next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
Nah, no you don't. We'll talk with Ryan Nobles from CNN coming up after 7:30. Tomorrow is Amazon Prime Day. Is the second one of these? A third? I feel like it's only the second. But Amazon Prime Day is when they start putting up deals actually at 9 o'clock tonight, 8 o'clock our time. And then it's going to continue to change over and over again to make sure every 5 minutes for 30 hours straight, there's a new big deal for you to grab at Amazon Prime.
This is the third one, by the way.
Third? Okay.
Yep.
And for any of you who participated in this in the past, you know, you got to be ready to act. It's sort of like going to, your favorite store on Black Friday.
Right. Or like buying concert tickets. You have to get...
The line's going to be long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You can stay up all night and try to get deals if you want and all day tomorrow, but there will be deals every 5 minutes for 30 hours. By the way, the whole point here is to push their Prime membership again because Amazon doesn't have enough money. If you don't have a Prime membership already, you can sign up for a free 30-day trial and still take it part in the deals. They're offering a $10 credit right now off your first order, plus a bonus of $10 towards future orders if you use the code 10 Prime Day. Use the code 10 Prime Day, the number 10 Prime Day.
These deals are amazing. Oh, my gosh.
Again, access to this year's deal start. Were they teasing them now?
Yeah, I don't want to read them all because then everyone's going to go buy them.
Access to this year's deal start at 8 o'clock tonight, Chicago time, 9 o'clock East and West. And if you have Alexa devices, you can go, Alexa, what are your deals?
Hey, cool.
And you can hear what deals are available.
After you say play WGN News.
Yes.
After the first 2 years, they got a lot of complaints from people that the sales were not as good as they should be. Some people even described them as like rummage sale type, you know, basically clearing out
the stock. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So this year they've actually, you know, they say they have taken steps to make it better, to make the deals even better and make it stuff that you want to buy.
So I don't have Amazon Prime.
What are you waiting for?
I know I'm gonna. That's, well, now I'm gonna do it for sure.
Well, it was $100.
Yeah, it's only $100 a year, but I have
$100
to buy. $100.
You will make that up in shipping.
Yeah, probably in two months.
Well, no, one show for you.
Right.
No, it's not true. Well, maybe.
There's a wait list as well. So let's say that Steve is trying to buy a. What would you be looking for, Steve?
I don't know, like a new drone, perhaps.
Steve's looking for a new drone. Because his current drone would like a friend.
It was confiscated.
Was it?
You can click the join the waitlist button on the product page to get notified for some reason if more inventory becomes available on something that sells out. So you can be waitlisted in.
So you get the same price then, say, in a month if it's out of ship. Okay, out of stock.
Sort of remember the old rain check you used to get at the
That's it.
Yeah,
remember
those? Yeah. One thing that reviewers of Amazon Prime ask you to remember, whether or not it's actually a big discount in the first place, that you may want to check prices, especially if you're buying a pricier item.
Do you get a deal on Prime? So if I want to become an Amazon Prime member, is there a deal on Prime, or do I have to pay the full price for Prime to get the deal?
Yeah, you have to pay the full price for Prime, but I think it's the $10 off thing will save you basically $20 today.
Oh, okay.
And they
got
have
it.
Free trial, too.
Yeah, and the free trial you can use.
I'm so in.
Yeah, throughout the year, Andrea, you will see, like, deals. Whenever you sign into Amazon, it'll give you, like, an Amazon, the Prime deal.
Oh, this is
so
great.
Throughout the year, you'll see
there's
special
There's one a
pricing.
Day, though, right? Yeah. Isn't that the deal? Isn't there one Prime deal a day, or is there more than that?
I think there's going to be one every 5 minutes.
No, I know for this, but throughout the year you were talking about.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I just know every time I sign on, there's, like, a new deal in your whole list.
Right,
and a lot of it is because of stuff you bought in the past, because they'll give you something they think is targeted to you. They've thought this stuff out pretty well there at the Amazon.
I'm buying a Dot.
Huh?
I'm buying a Dot. You know, the Echo.
Let me make one for
Amazon.
You.
No, the little Dot, you know, instead of the Amazon Echo,
the
tall
disc.
The disc, yeah.
They have a new one. It's called a Tap now.
What's
seen that? It's bigger than.
Wait, does this involve beer?
No. There's the Echo.
You thought because Dave brought it up, it was a boost thing?
All right, Grisanna. Sorry. No, but it's. I think it's does not have to be. I think it's rechargeable, unlike the Echo and the Dot, which have to be plugged in.
Oh, I see. Oh, so it's gonna be, you can put it anywhere.
It comes in with a charging cradle, and so you can move it around.
Meanwhile, Google Home made some news over the weekend. This is the Amazon Echo version from Google. When there was a domestic fight going on that got very elevated, and Google Home automatically called 911.
How cool is that? I mean, that's.
I think it's cool.
Well,
I
guess
cool
that's true.
It's cool in this case,
unless you fight a lot in your house.
Well, there's reasons you make a lot of noise, you know, and they're not always a fight. It could be because you're moving something.
Oh yeah.
Or other reasons. But Google Home is now policing.
Yeah, that might be a little invasive.
You get back to Amazon. Is Jeff Bezos sitting in a room going, it's like the coolest cable channel ever. He just goes around the world and just sees what people are doing.
Do you wonder if these devices are like listening in ever?
Well, they are. They are.
Come on.
Well, of course, that's how they got the Google Home thing done. They're all listening in. Look, your laptop, your iPad can take pictures of you naked.
Well, what if it's
your Google Home can hear everything you do? It's over. You have no privacy.
What if it's listening in when, you know?
When stuff's happening?
Yeah.
Well, then it's having a good time. The middle of your miserable commute this morning because of the rain brings up this story. Who has the longest commute in the country? Southern California. No big surprise there. Southern California continues to get that honor, if that's the word. The data organized by county shows the Pike County, Pennsylvania part of the New York, New Jersey, Jersey City metropolitan area technically has the longest average commute time in the nation, clogging in at 44 minutes. This is average commute time. Most of the other super long commutes are New York City workers, including the Bronx and Brooklyn, where the average commute times are all more than 40 minutes long. You think about it, if you're in the Bronx and you work in Manhattan and you're 40 minutes door to door, That's a few miles.
Yeah.
You ain't moving.
Mm-mm.
Same thing for Brooklyn.
Why are you driving, though?
Well, because, you know, you're like me and you're a control freak and you want your car.
Right.
Of course, at our hour, you can't get a train.
That's true.
You know, super early. In New York, the subways run 24 hours, but the metro trains from the suburbs don't necessarily.
What's the longest you guys would commute? Like, it can't be more than, say, an hour. And I don't mean
I
don't mean
an
with
hour
weather.
Every day.
Doesn't it drive you crazy though?
Not anymore.
Well, now you're just used to it.
Well, you get used to it because it's what you chose to do, I suppose.
Yeah.
I've told the story before, but we moved to Chicago in 1994. There were, you know, looked at houses north, looked at houses west, and houses south. Mm-hmm. And found this great area west. This is before I got the double wide in East St. Louis. I said, well, I got to test the commute. And I left. I was working at a station called FM 100 now. What is it? What is it now? What's 100.3
it's
now?
She
FM?
Yeah.
Good morning, She FM. Good luck to you. The station was in the Hancock.
Oh, yeah.
So I left the Hancock. I was doing a morning show. I left the Hancock, you know, noon. Mm-hmm. And I got to the greater Naperville area at 12:55.
Oh, so it was less than
55
an
minutes. And I thought, well, I could do this.
Yeah.
Never in my life has it been that fast since. and basically what we determined was the real estate guy had a car maybe, you know, a half mile in front of me clearing traffic.
Exactly
out.
Right.
Yeah. Just to make sure that I buy the house.
I wonder what the longest commute.
In Chicago?
Yeah.
Like who commutes longest to get to work in
Chicago?
Yeah.
Well, you had a listener one time. Someone called in. They drive every day to the city from Champaign. Remember that? It was when you heard the last
one. Yeah. Anybody top that? Anybody driving in? Well, you know, when I drive in from East St. Louis, I don't do it in the summertime, but I drive in from East St. Louis, I like to do it in the winter where it takes longer. Mm-hmm. That's a long haul.
I think there are a lot of people who commute from southern Wisconsin. That can be a pretty good commute.
It's a good commute. That's a long drive. Mm-hmm. What's Orion's commute when Orion's in here?
He timed it. It was like 53 minutes or 54 minutes.
I thought it was 53 miles.
Oh, I thought it was minutes.
And
is
that's
longer?
At 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
Going back out.
Right.
That's like mine's a half hour in, but it can be 2 hours going home, depending on what time of day I leave.
We're on the Edens, right?
The Edens.
Yeah. I maintain the Edens is the worst road in Chicago.
I completely agree. Edens/Kennedy.
Underrated. Kennedy the Kennedy the Kennedy is what it is, because you got that little thing called O'Hare.
Mm-hmm.
But the Edens, there's no excuse for the Edens to be the cluster that it is.
Completely agree.
It's true.
It's because it's three lanes, and the gridlock is always right, Susan, right here in the downtown area
by
the Ohio Feeder.
Right. And I can vouch for the Stevenson. It's gotten worse and worse.
Stevenson
over the
is
years.
Bad.
Yeah.
It,
very bad.
Yeah. And the Ike's weird. But, you know, it's bad going both ways. But, to me, the road I'd avoid is Eden's. Okay. Named after Barbara Eden. Jeannie.
Really?
I don't know if you know that.
I drive it every day. I never knew that.
Yeah. Let's see this quick break. We're back with the big story in just a moment on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Are you satisfied with the team he has around him right now?
You know, I am, but the immediate team. But I do think there's, you know, there's plenty in D.C. There's probably plenty still in the White House. There's plenty of holdovers, you know, that aren't necessarily working in his best interest.
And do you think there's people that are actively working against him?
Oh, I think without question. I mean, to me, it's without a question. You know, reads and smells like a witch hunt.
Must be a stupid witch. Not that hard to hunt you guys. That's the remarkable thing about the Trump family of lies. They're really, really bad at it. You would think if you do something every single day, lie, which is what they do, that you'd be really skilled. But we got three stories again on the Donald Trump Jr. meeting, and none of the three stories compute. Ryan Nobles joins us now. Ryan Nobles, by the way, you ought to get like a an endorsement deal with Advil where you wear a patch on your suit just to cover the headache these people give you.
Steve, I never imagined after we talked last week and then I went off on vacation, the president embarking on this huge trip overseas where he was going to have his first face-to-face meeting with Vladimir Putin, that we'd wake up on Monday and the topic wouldn't be anything having to do with that meeting, but instead another bombshell about his campaign's potential ties to Russia. This administration keeps us moving in different directions. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and this is going to save Bob Mueller a lot of time because you'd have to do a lot of investigating to get to the bottom of this. But fortunately, Junior basically confessed to the fact that he was meeting with a Kremlin-connected attorney to get damaging information on Hillary Clinton. Did he say too much or did he have to respond?
Well, Donald Trump Jr.'s statements on this have been all over the map. Initially, he said that the meeting was about adoption trying to facilitate opening up adoption channels between the two countries again. But then he later did admit that he was under the impression that this attorney was going to come to the meeting with some damaging information about Hillary Clinton. But all morning long, Kellyanne Conway, I've watched about three different interviews with her this morning where she's tried to explain away this interaction. And to me, I haven't been able to really wrap my mind around what their defense is, other than that when that meeting took place, there was no exchange of information. No one has seemed to refute the fact that Donald Trump Jr. went into this meeting with this attorney under the impression that there was going to be some sort of damaging information that could be used against Hillary Clinton, essentially opposition research from an attorney tied to the Kremlin. They've not denied that. They've just said essentially that we're focused on the wrong things, as they, which is often their response to stories.
Why aren't you, Ryan, talking about the meeting, the G20 summit? Oh, wait, don't talk about that either. Why aren't you talking about other things that went well as opposed to this, which is right in front of you, which is clearly news?
Well, I think the big thing, Kellyanne Conway's big defense this morning has been that the media should only be focusing on this report, which is an important report that says that James Comey may have revealed classified information when he leaked out those memos to the New York Times that eventually led to the calling of a special counsel. That's not to say that that information isn't important and shouldn't be reported, but it's interesting that she believes that we should completely ignore this other report and only focus on this report. I think it's a good example of how the administration is perfectly fine with unnamed sources and background information if it's a report that is damaging to someone that is in opposition to them. But if the same type of reporting is done to report on their administration, it is a huge problem. So, you know, they act like they only want us to focus on the positive things, what they're doing for veterans, what they've done for the economy, on and on and on. But in reality, as evidenced by the more than a dozen tweets from the president this morning, they're still very focused on hammering their political opponents and making them look bad. So there's no reason to think that, you know, that they're truly would wish that all of us just kind of moved into this kumbaya atmosphere and only reported on the good stuff.
That's how you end up with Kim Jong-un. common sense is the greatest threat to the Trump administration, because, and this is where I go to the fact that they're bad at their lies, because common sense would tell you a number of things. One would tell you that if Vladimir Putin says that Donald Trump accepted his denial that they had anything to do with meddling in the 2016 election, and nobody in your administration is willing to come out and vociferously defend you until the Sunday talk shows, and you really haven't said anything, you, Donald Trump, haven't said anything of substance that you defended it, the common sense would tell you that Trump's version is Putin's version, and that Putin's telling the truth. And the idea that Putin would be more truthful than the president of the United States, well, that's pretty disturbing, right?
I mean, I can't make heads or tails of exactly what happened in this meeting. You know, initially, the president said that he confronted Putin about it. Putin asked for evidence. But then they talked about forming a cybersecurity joint task force that was going to, you know, help everyone stop, you know, protect people from cybersecurity or from cybersecurity threats across the world.
Good idea.
But then after, when there were this round criticism of the idea of ever getting into some sort of a deal with Vladimir Putin was a bad idea, the president tweets this morning that, I just said we talked about it. I never said that we were going to actually do it. I mean, you cannot get a handle at all as to what exactly took place in these meetings. And that is a scary thing when you consider Vladimir Putin's background and how numerous presidents have thought that they could be the one to break through with him and learn quickly that that was not the case. I mean, Marco Rubio's tweeting this morning about how he, no matter what Putin said in that meeting, you can't really trust what exactly went on. So, you know, and again, to your point, Steve, it would be nice to have the president of the United States sit in front of someone who would be a fair interviewer and ask him these very direct questions about exactly what happened in that meeting. And so instead of us trying to piecemeal together statements from Steve Mnuchin and from Rex Tillerson and from Kellyanne Conway that don't necessarily, and then his tweets, none of which from those four different sources add up to the same exact story, that we could get some sort of semblance as to exactly what happened in that meeting.
The
right
press,
now, we really don't have any
last
idea.
Press conference was February?
February. It was the last time he had, you know, he had that one kind of, you know, big press conference where they canceled the briefing abruptly and he came out and did, to his credit, answer questions for more than an hour. Since then, the only time he's answered questions have been from friendly interviewers, and
Fox.
He would answer one or two questions with another world leader, and then often would call on people in the crowd that are in the assembled press corps who are friendly interviewers. I mean, one of the first questions he took on his overseas trip was from someone who interviewed to be his press secretary. So, he still has not, got in front of, a good interviewer like he did with Lester Holt, and someone like that, where he would answer these questions that we need answers from and we need to understand exactly what's going on.
Much more with Ryan Noble's coming up. Before we take the traffic break, though, what were you going to bring up?
I was just going to ask if there's a positive takeaway from either the G20 or from the Putin meeting, instead of just everything being brushed under the rug, as it appears to be. Any positive takeaway from either, Ryan?
I mean, it was funny because up until this morning, aside from the kind of misdirection that happened with the Putin meeting, I think that the speech in Poland was pretty well received. I think that he touched on a lot of important issues in that. He had another good meeting. He continues to develop what appears to be a good relationship with President Xi in China. They seem to be making some sort of progress on North Korea. I mean, it's not as if this trip overseas was a total bungle. But it's like he, as I started off the interview with, it's like he gets back home and all these other problems that he's been dealing with, this shadow that's cast over his administration, we forget all about it. And it's just so difficult for him to move the ball forward and move his agenda forward when he is still underneath the thumb of this Russia investigation.
This is why this constant harangue of fake news is so offensive, because the fact of the matter is the New York Times, Washington Post, and Chicago Tribune, this radio station and all the other people, including, of course, CNN and all the work Ryan's done, these are people trying to report facts. And these facts include good news and bad news about both parties. It was last fall and into January where this collusion story continued to bubble up. And Donald Trump Jr., amongst everybody in Trump's inner circle, could not be faster to a microphone to say it's all made up, it's all false, it's somebody coming after our agenda. And we continue to find out, much like Watergate, we continue to find out over the weeks and months that, no, it all turns out to be true. So in the end, Ryan, good reporting wins.
Yeah, and the other important point about that, which is something Kellyanne Conway's been pressed on a number of times this morning, it doesn't have an explanation, is that the administration said repeatedly that all the meetings with potential Russian officials had been disclosed. They've said that from the moments after they were elected. And it seems like every month there's a new revelation of another new meeting with another Russian official. Initially, it was the Sessions meeting with Kislyak. And then we had Jared Kushner's meeting with a Russian bank. Now, yet another meeting with an attorney tied to the Kremlin with Donald Trump Jr., where Donald Trump Jr. himself admits that he thought that there was going to be some sort of opposition research presented about Hillary Clinton. So if you can't trust them, you can't necessarily trust the responses they give to this current situation when you have clear evidence over the past couple of months of examples of where they told us there was nothing else to see, and then later it came out that there was indeed a lot more to see.
Yeah, and tell the truth, and you'll be able to get to your agenda, and that's what we'll be talking about. And Ryan Nobles is standing by from CNN. We've got a couple more minutes here with Ryan. All right, so in regards to this Donald Trump Jr. Story, like so many other things, does this get swept because we get caught up in the next thing, or what happens?
I mean, it really depends on how the special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, handles this whole situation. I mean, I think a lot of these reports are white noise for the most part until Mueller emerges with some sort of a report or issues some sort of a declaration as to what he's finally discovered and how all of these different tentacles of this story tied together to draw some sort of a conclusion. I mean, I guess to answer your question, it probably does somewhat get pushed under the rug. But, these investigations continue, and it is something that the administration is going to have to contend with, even though they want to continue to tell us that there's nothing to see here.
By the way, unusual circumstances are also new. So while we all don't need to have a meltdown over Ivanka Trump sitting in the president's seat, it was an unusual circumstance, which was why it was a reported story. It's not an attack on Ivanka. It's just a story.
Right. But I think that's a good example, Steve, of how, Trump, people that support Trump, they have at least two or three bullets in the chamber that they can use to fire back whenever they claim that they're being unfairly treated by the media. And I do think, you know, judging by the initial response to seeing her sitting in that chair and then the subsequent understanding of exactly what happened there, that there was probably, you know, people that are not fans of Donald Trump rushed to some sort of judgment about exactly what it meant. So, yes, you're right that, you know, it was worthy of being reported, but kind of the detractors of Trump that overreacted to the situation fuel his argument that he's being treated unfairly. Another good example is this kind of weird interaction that he had with the wife of the leader of Poland, where you know, it looked as though she didn't shake Trump's hand, but it was just a misunderstanding. And then everyone ran with it as that she was disrespecting Trump and she didn't want to touch him. And then later, the leader of Poland himself has to tweet about it. And then they both talk about fake news. And this is what feeds this kind of yep. beast that just keeps, you know, rotating like a, you know, washing machine over and over. And if you're just an average person who, you know, you don't necessarily have strong political leanings either way, and you're just trying to figure out what's going on in the world, and you're just inundated with all these different opinions and people coming back and forth, you know, I can understand why people would be frustrated by this and really try and get to the bottom of what is the truth. It's not easy with all the information that people are thrown at, and that so much of that information comes to them through some sort of a partisan perspective.
Here is the number one story, or it should be the number one story of the day, and that is Mitch McConnell and his friends are back in town with mm-hmm. no hopes of getting a health care plan done. Is there any reason to believe that'll change?
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm headed in just a few minutes. I'll be covering health care all week, and the sense that I get from our reporting is that it's as bleak as it's ever been. And McConnell's even now opening the door to working with Democrats as a way to try and get conservatives back into the fold. You know, our whip count has at least 10 Republicans who are now a hard no on the health care bill in its current form. You know, I talked with my family a lot. I was on a family vacation this week, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, brothers-in-law, and they're all like, so what's the deal with health care? And it's like, when I talk to people about it and truly unpack it, I think that it is so – we've gone down such a road where I don't think slight tweaks to the bill on either side are going to be enough to satisfy these warring factions. I mean, totally this agree. Is really a mess at this point. And so I don't know. I could see a scenario where Mitch McConnell says, we're not going to get this done by the end of July. I'm not interested in keeping all of you here through the August recess to continue – to beat our heads against the wall. We need to take a step back and look at this at another time and just start from scratch. I think that's certainly possible.
Somewhere that old creep Harry Reid is giggling. My words, not yours. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate the extra time.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great week.
Follow him on Twitter, of course, and all through social media. Ryan Nobles from CNN. Back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
Live to Channel 9 and Dean Richards. Good morning, Dean.
Hello, good morning. Happy Monday.
Got a lot of show business news, but I really wanted to bring up this important topic. I'm tired of talking on the phone. I'm reluctant to answer the phone anymore because you know why? This is said originally by the great golfer Freddie Couples, who said, I don't like answering the phone because I'm concerned someone might be there when I pick it up. And it's not because, I mean, I have good friends. Like you do, and people that, you know, call all the time. Dean's a good friend because he doesn't call. But I don't want to talk on the phone anymore.
How would you prefer to communicate?
Smoke signals. Maybe, you know, carrier pigeon.
Telegraph.
Paul Revere rides by on a horse.
I have to say, I do find myself texting more than placing a quick call.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. I got in this discussion with Pat Brady. You know Pat Brady. He's on the show all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Pat Brady hates texting. He prefer to talk on the phone, and he's on the phone all day.
Oh, no.
And I've told Pat, I go, listen, 4 hours with you on a golf course is enough. I don't need to hear your voice anymore.
And while you're bringing this up, too, you don't need to leave a really long voicemail. I mean, I'm guilty of that. I know with you sometimes. But.
Nah, it's, you know, I mean, I check my messages every 6 months. And then, you know, so.
I have a 30-second rule with a voicemail. If you leave me anything longer than that, I delete you.
Yeah.
Well, I used to give Ross a hard time about this because Ross and, you know, his generation of, you know, millennial ne'er-do-wells and thugs, they're the ones going, no, it's texting. It's texting. Yeah. You know, don't leave me a message. Why would you leave me a message? Don't leave me a message. And, you know, I know. And, Dave, your kids do this.
Mm-hmm.
I know he screens his calls.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Like, yeah. He doesn't want to talk to his father. Right. He's going, oh, yeah, I didn't know you called. Yeah, no, I had no idea.
Yeah. You get a text right back, right?
Do you? No. Of course you do. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Sorry.
Come on. Don't you think maybe...
Touch
maybe,
a nerve there.
Maybe your kids have left the phone in another room. That could be a possibility.
No, and here's why I know that's not true, because the phone's never out of his hand or his pocket.
It's attached to them.
Trying to give him the benefit of the
doubt. Now, I will say this, in defense of Ross, the job he has with Pearl Mortgage, he's on the phone all day. So being on a phone all day, I can understand why he wouldn't want to be on the phone much after that. But he didn't want to be on the phone when he was 15 or 16. You know, he just didn't like talking on the phone.
Almost always you can say in one sentence in a text what, you know, will become a five-minute conversation on the phone.
Right.
Yes.
But here's the thing. It's curious, right? It's like that the whole notion about, because when we were growing up in the 70s when dinosaurs roamed the earth, you know, a 10-ounce pop, soda pop was enough. Now you're going, what, are you kidding me? You got to have the 32-ounce jumbo. Like, when did we get so thirsty? You know, and secondarily, Dean, when did we get so busy that talking on the phone or checking our messages is a strain?
That's true.
Now, let me preface.
Are we more busy now than we were then?
Can you send me a text about that?
Right.
Because you're tired of hearing me talk about it.
So I should just preface this by saying, except when my mom calls, because I love that. I love when she says, do you have a minute?
This is another one of those times where Andrea feels a slight bit of awkwardness in the conversation. It makes her very uncomfortable.
I'm going to get a text.
Aren't there times where you're just like, I just can't talk right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate, Dean, that you know I'm screening the calls when you call, and I'll call you back.
Eventually. I don't think I have ever actually called you on the – I almost always text you.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe like in the whole
that's
time a,
that's
I've
why Dean
you
and I
once
are friends.
Twice,
we never expect anything from each other.
Plus, you're guys. You never talked anymore. Anyway, women talk on the phone.
Oh, no. We share our feelings all the time. Watch. Dean, how you feeling?
Oh, I'm a little bloated today.
So there you go. We're done.
Steve, do these jeans make my butt look fat?
Now, see, that's more than I needed.
See, that was very deep.
This is why I don't answer the phone. Coming up, the future of James Bond.
He has to answer my butt question. Text, he could just delete. Done.
Hey, that could be a new game on the show here. Butt questions. Yeah. We could just do J-Lo and all those other people.
Oh, that's great.
Shia LaBeouf's in the news.
Oh, boy.
Just when we thought he was straightening himself out. Carrie Fisher State is in the news. Julianne Hough is in the news. As a matter of fact, there are a couple of Dancing with the Stars news items from the weekend involving nuptials. Hey, nice nuptials. All of that is coming up. Before we get to that, we go back to Susan Berkus, who's in for Mary, who's trying to make bail in Wisconsin. What's up, Susan?
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
All right, back to Dean. Let's start with the Shia LaBeouf story. I'm looking across the street at where the old Walgreens used to be, and just down the street, I think it was the Chicago Avenue Walgreens where Shia LaBeouf was arrested,
Michigan Avenue in Chicago is where, when Shia LaBeouf, I think he was making the first Transformers movie, goes into that store and becomes unruly and got arrested. That was in 2007. Since then, he's been arrested two more times. One was a DUI, one was public drunkenness, and he's been in and out of trouble with the law, bizarre behavior. It seemed like things were back on track for him. Things had gotten a little bit better. Over the weekend, he was arrested again for public drunkenness, obstruction of justice, creating a public nuisance in Savannah, Georgia, where he's making a movie. Police say that he walked up to a person on the street and asked for a cigarette. He was refused the cigarette and then became belligerent with the person. A police officer got involved and told him to leave. here's where the really smart part comes in. Then he gets belligerent with the police officer, and police officer was going to arrest him. He runs away, runs into a hotel where the police followed him, and he was arrested in the hotel lobby. He's posted bail. He's out of jail. But another mugshot for Shia.
Listen, I think we can agree he's a good actor, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be the first actor who was troubled. But is this like an undiagnosed Britney Spears, Amanda Bynes situation where he's got legitimate mental issues, or is it all booze-related?
I think it's the former. I think it's the undiagnosed problems. It keeps happening over right. and over again. I don't know. I mean, I don't. You know, your guess is as good.
Seems
as mine.
Bipolar-ish.
I think it doesn't sound like somebody who is, you know, just drunk or high or whatever. It seems like something a little deeper. So
it's not like Larry.
Potash. He is off again today.
Yeah, well, you got to sober up eventually.
Daddy's
not feeling joke.
Well. Daddy's not feeling well today.
All right, what's the future of the James Bond franchise?
There are reports coming out of the UK this morning that Daniel Craig is going to be back as James Bond.
Oh, that means I'm not going to get it.
Yeah, sorry. You missed out on another chance with this.
We were going to do a senior version of James Bond because, you know, I'm 56.
Mm-hmm.
And the senior version of James Bond is the Bond girls would be older and probably wearing some sort of outdated fashion.
Right.
And I, as the Bond guy, would use my power of napping to chase down bad guys. Oh. And just when they think I'm asleep, I'd jump. I'd get up slowly so I don't get dizzy. I'd get up and I'd catch them with my cane.
Instead of cool gadgets in an Aston Martin, Steve would have his gadgets in his walker.
and my Hummeround scooter.
Right.
And the women would flank you.
Yeah. Hello. What?
Yeah, just to make sure that I had my medication.
Exactly.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
007 just got flanked.
Stand behind you.
He's got that freshly flanked look.
He does. Look at that smile on his face.
I was watching the 90s thing on CNN last night, getting depressed, realizing it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, so some publications in the UK say that Daniel Craig has come to terms with the producers of the Bond movies, will star in the next movie, which is said to be titled Bond 25. And they're saying that Adele will also be back to sing the title song for that movie. She won a Grammy for her song Skyfall a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
I like James Daniel Craig.
I do, too.
And as Bond. I think
he's my second favorite James Bond.
After Sean Connery?
Correct.
Yep. The True Blood actor that passed this weekend, who is he?
His name is Nelson Ellis. He's... was only 39 years old.
That's awful.
Died of complications of heart failure. He's got deep Chicago roots. He was born in Harvey, Illinois. Lived here as a child. Family moved to Alabama. He moved back as a teenager. Went to school in the area and before going to Juilliard. Has always had ties to Chicago. He was here a couple of years ago directing a play. Remember, we had him in the Showcase studio visiting with us. Nelson Ellis is his name. He played Lafayette on True Blood. And incredibly talented young actor. All the actors on the show reacting, saying what a brilliant actor he was, what a nice person he was. But how sad is that?
It is sad.
Complications of heart failure, 39 years old.
The Carrie Fisher estate in the news?
Yeah, her daughter, not surprisingly, is going to be the beneficiary of all of that, and she will inherit it all. She will get all the physical property. She will get the actual home in which Carrie Fisher lived, which is up for sale right now. Jewelry, bank accounts, artwork. She inherits the rights to her mother's public image, et cetera. Billy Lord is the daughter's name, so that went down over the weekend.
And what is the Fisher-Stevens relation to the family? Is he a half-brother or something?
I don't know.
Because I remember when they did the documentary with her and Mom, you know, there's some ancillary folks floating around, and there's Fisher-Stevens. I'm going, well, what's this about?
Yeah, that I don't know.
Did the family enjoy fishing?
Enjoyed fish. I know that Carrie Fisher enjoyed a nice piece of salmon.
Like a nice piece of fish. Yeah. A couple of Dancing with the Stars weddings this weekend. I was not invited to either. Were you there?
No, and did not. I don't think I would have gone. I think I'm starting to take more of your tact. Except I know that you like to be invited but don't want to go.
Right. Invite me to everything. I want to be included, yeah. But I'm not going to come.
Yeah, I don't even need to be invited.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty fine with that.
Okay.
Julianne Hough got married to a gentleman by the name of Brooks Lake. They had a beautiful wedding, actually, that was on a lake. It was on the water.
Seems redundant.
In Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 200 of their closest friends. But also married over the weekend, a couple of the dancers on Dancing with the Stars, Peta Murgatroyd and Maxim Shmerkovsky.
Is he the guy that doesn't like me?
He liked you. He
But well, he's the guy that was in there. He didn't like me.
Yeah, he liked you a little bit.
No, he didn't like me.
He dipped us.
He felt I was the brother, right?
Yeah, he felt I was a physical threat to him.
He was selling his jewelry, and he didn't think you liked his jewelry. Yeah, that could be it. Physical threat.
The jewelry that he was wearing, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Men's jewelry.
selling the jewelry he was wearing.
Hey, you want to buy this ring?
It's like a skull ring. Very sexy.
I believe I have an answer to the Fisher Stevens question. Sandberg, Fisher Stevens directed a movie that Carrie Fisher was in? Is that the only connection? Is that accurate? Is that completely accurate? Is that accurate? Go ahead and turn a microphone on.
Did you dream this?
Why am I not hearing you? Wrong button. Turn on the right button.
Fisher
Good God.
Stevens.
What's going on, people?
I don't see anything.
Am I up?
It may have been me.
Okay.
No.
It says that he teamed up with Alexis Bloom to direct the film Bright Lights, starring Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds, which premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in 2016.
So just a family friend, then.
That's all what comes up in the Wikipedia. It usually knows everything.
That's true. Wikipedia.
Always accurate.
Never wrong. Oh. Okay. And I feel like we're...
That was the documentary, right? That was the HBO documentary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I feel like we're forgetting one. Did we forget one, or is that the list?
One of the stories?
Yeah.
Well, let me see here. Because I just put this list together like 5 minutes ago, so of course I've pretty much forgotten it all.
Right.
No, we covered everything.
Okay, so how you doing?
Is there anything else that you'd like to cover?
You good? Everything all right with you?
I'm a little distracted today, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I brought a banana with me from home.
Right.
I enjoy a more greenish banana than, once it starts to get the brown spots on it, I'll still eat it, but when it gets past the brown spots, it disgusts me. I can't even stand it.
See, I'm like the opposite. I like it mushier.
Yeah. You're
going to save my brown bananas for you then.
No. Okay, yeah, yeah, Dean, that'd be great.
Andre has brought bananas in here that died weeks ago.
It's disgusting.
I don't get it. But I don't like the green ones either.
I enjoy a little more on the green side.
I like a yellow banana.
Yeah, right in the middle.
Ideally. But my point is that I brought a banana from a bunch at home this morning. It was green when I left the house. I set it down here on my desk several hours ago. And when I went to enjoy it a few minutes ago, it's brown. How did it turn brown so fast?
That's the newsroom. There's some pollutants in that newsroom that'll kill your banana.
I'm so distracted. I literally spent 20 minutes on the computer. It's like, why? How would that happen?
You know to blame? Anna Balabal.
What happened to my banana?
The key part to that story, you know, like the Donald Trump Jr. thing this weekend, the key part that jumped out to me was who goes to a meeting and doesn't know who they're meeting. The key part to Dean's story is I spent 20 minutes trying to figure out why my banana
on the internet
turned brown.
It's not natural for a banana to turn brown so quickly.
For you Sinclair people listening this morning, this is what you bought.
So you mess with this perfection.
$6 billion. Got your money's worth. All right, man. Talk to you.
Bye.
That's Dean Richards back with a big story in a moment. Kellyanne Conway reacting to that Trump Jr. story and the weekend at the G20, which is not a hip new club. All coming up on 720 WGN. Guest was super
live
long.
From the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Book's called The Smart One. Drew Yano is the author, and not his first trip around the publishing business, and Drew joins us now. Drew, by the way, you know, I talk about having dreams and chasing your dreams no matter what you're doing in life. If there's something else you've always wanted to do, why not do that? I'm sure your dream while you're on hold is that I would stop saying Garbino Muguruva. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I just don't want to have to say it myself.
Don't blame you. Drew's book, again, is called The Smart One. All right, so what were you doing before you decided, I want to be a writer?
Oh, boy. You know, I wanted to be a writer as a kid, but you know how life works out, so yeah. That you go to college and you think, well, that's not exactly the most normal thing to do. So I became a lawyer, sadly, and practiced law for a number of years and was fortunate enough to do what a lot of lawyers actually have done and segue into a writing career for a while, although I'm still practicing law.
Now, you grew up in upstate New York where?
I grew up in a little town called Little Falls, which is sure. Just about 20 minutes north of Cooperstown.
Yeah, I grew up in Ithaca.
Oh, sure. Know it well. Gorgeous. Yeah. Beautiful gorgeous.
Yeah, central New York. But as a kid, I don't know how old you are, but as a kid growing up, you know, you think, well, if you have a creative mind, you think writing is really cool. Did you excel in it in school? Were you good at it?
No, actually, I was horrible.
So there's no reason to believe you'd become an author someday.
No, I marveled at, I love to read, so I would marvel at how the devil did the person know to write those words on page 183. You know, I just had no clue. And, you know, I muddled my way through and I did well in school. But when I became a lawyer when I went to law school, I couldn't write. And boy, you weren't going to do well in law school if you didn't know how to write. And those exams are pretty tough. So I actually went back to the drawing board and kind of taught myself to write.
He's got a great stick-to-itiveness as well, because he decided to get into the incredibly difficult screenwriting business. Yeah. I know you sold a picture to Universal, but all that took was 8 years. There's a scene at the end of The Player, a great movie, The Player, with Tim Robbins. You know the scene I'm talking about? Where Tim Robbins walks into a warehouse, and there are boxes and boxes and boxes of unproduced scripts. And you go and you see a movie on a weekend, you go, well, how the hell did that get made? There's a million people in the food chain that make these decisions, and great writing doesn't guarantee your movie's ever going to see the light of day. But if you love it and you're committed to it, you know, you keep fighting for it, I guess, right?
I had that same experience. Every executive's office I ever walked into, there was a giant bookshelf behind the desk filled with scripts just stacked up with the name in the, the binding. And you just thought, my God, they bought all these and probably none of these will ever get made.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's endlessly frustrating because you put your heart and sweat and love into it. And you go, well, this is fantastic. Somebody's going to make this for sure. All right. Stick around. I want to talk about your book when we come back. The Smart One.
Sure.
Drew Yano. It's out and available everywhere. Get two copies. You're careless. You lose the first one. Susan Burke is here. She has a cold. She's in for Mary. She has a cold, so don't touch your radio. You might catch it. More than ever reason to keep it on this program. And what do you have for the car situation?
Well, the car situation, it's been a rough one this morning. Traffic is sponsored by Jewel, an earlier accident on what?
Drew Yano is the guest, Chief Operations Officer and General Counsel at Bates Communication. What is Bates Communications, Drew?
Bates Communications is a communications consulting firm here in Wellesley, Massachusetts, which is, of course, the Boston area, founded by Suzanne Bates, who happens to be from Danville, Illinois. We coach executives at the highest level in multinational companies on communicating strategy down through the ranks and, of course, change events and things of that nature.
I assume business is good?
Business actually is pretty good, yes.
Excellent. Good for you. One of the things you've done in your life is script consultant, script teacher, script professor, script writer, and writer of stuff about scripts for Script Magazine. So you know the business. Is that how you met Will Smith?
It is. I was teaching screenwriting at Boston College, and like a lot of professors, I wrote a book about what I taught, and I just came across the idea that no one had written a book about how to write the ending of a film, which I think is the most important part.
And always, and well, so not wrote, always, but often a disappointment.
Sure, sure. So I wrote the book, and about, I don't know, less than a year later, I got an email from someone who said, hey, my boss read your book. He really wants to talk to you. She didn't name the boss, but I saw the email address, and it was Overbrook Entertainment. And I thought, that's Will Smith's production company. And sure enough, it was Will. So, yeah, we got together, and I did a bunch of work for Will. It was great.
He's a good guy, right? I mean, I was a good experience with him.
Yeah, he is exactly who you wish he would be.
Yep.
Observing him from afar.
Yep.
Absolutely.
The new book's called The Smart One. It's a thriller. Describe it.
Okay. The best way to describe it is to give you the premise. It's about this middle-aged guy who is generally been considered to be the smartest guy ever to come out of his little hometown and has been enormously successful his whole life. He gets a scholarship to one of the Ivy League schools, gets his PhD there. His thesis turns into a best-selling book. He writes a couple more. He gets rich. And when the story opens, he's actually still in that same town, but he's retired from his professorship prematurely. But everyone thinks, oh, that's because he's done work on his next big thing. In fact, he's actually in a horrible crisis and can't write a word. And as this is going on, he gets a message, a strange message from the wife of his family doctor growing up saying the doctor's died and you should come to the funeral. He can't imagine why he should do that since he hasn't seen the guy in over 30 years. But she persists and he eventually goes. And when he meets with her after the funeral, she tells him the doctor's left him something. And what he has left is an envelope with three pieces of paper inside. One of those pieces of paper is a list of 12 names, 12 names that he's never seen before, doesn't know them. And he looks up at the wife and she doesn't know. And one of the other pieces of paper are instructions to him saying, don't involve my wife in this in any way. But when you figure out what these 12 people have in common, you'll know what to do. So he thinks, well, all right, the guy died at 85, might have had some cognitive issues. I'll just go home and Google these names, and nobody will be the wiser if I don't find out anything. So he leaves, and he doesn't get very far before the widow calls him back and says, hey, I found something else. You got to come back. And he does, and let's just say things start to spiral
the
out of control.
The mystery deepens.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
He's chased by two men who want that list back awfully badly.
Drew Yano, the smart one, as always, I said, get two copies because you're careless. You'll lose the first one. Before I let you go, this is the overriding point for me about your life. My friend Laura Caldwell, who I think has written, I don't know, 12 or 13 books now. What tells you that even though you've developed a comfortable life in whatever you're doing, you've got to go right?
It's just an inner drive that's, I've always felt it since a kid. I wanted to write. I must have something I want to say to the world. I'm not sure the world wants to listen all the time, but that is just something you want to do. And I've heard writers say that they can't not write. And I understand that completely. So there's always a part of me that just wants to sit down and tell a story. I love stories. So
it's a long life, not a short life, a long life, and you got to be happy. So if there's something rattle around in your head, like, you know, you always wanted to be a cowboy, and there's a way for you to pull it off, then you should chase it. You should never stop having, I don't care if you're 70 years old, 80 years old, whatever. If you've never chased your dream, do it while you can. Because after you're dead, it's really hard to do it.
Yeah, you don't regret the things you've done. You regret the things you didn't do.
Yeah, well said. Drew Yano, nice to talk to you. Good luck.
You too. Thank you very much.
The Smart One. CLTV has joined us, and we always appreciate that. The 9 o'clock hour is on CLTV. You can wave, Dave. It's okay. Wave to your CLTV friends.
Hi, CLTV friends.
And we live from the Channel 9 / CLTV studios, where you're both working today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
Here we are.
When are you on?
I'll be on at 11:30.
On CLTV?
And 4 o'clock. Channel 9.
On Channel 9.
And then CLTV throughout the afternoon as well.
All right. And Dave, you're doing sports
I'll
tonight?
I'll be on the sports at 9 and 10 tonight.
Okay, and I'll be home.
Watching.
Later.
Watching.
Can you guys say hi to us when you're on TV?
Yeah.
For sure.
We'll say hi, Steve.
Yeah.
Hi, Steve.
Yeah.
We'll say hi, Steve, once because it's redundant
if
we say it twice.
That's a good point.
Good point, yeah.
Two birds, one stone.
We'll tug on our ear like Carol Burnett.
Again, Sinclair, this is what you paid for. It's 9:02. We'll come back, get your news in a second, and continue with this hour on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Show number 941, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, continues. And the lovely and talented Jen Weigel is in studio, who just informed me that she and I started working together 20 years ago.
We were.
What were you, four?
I was going to say, I was four, you were eight.
We were so cute. It was crazy. Disney called. They wanted to give us a show. It was great.
There was a... you found some pictures of staff pictures here.
Oh, yeah. These are hilarious.
These are here. And it's like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But you say, I look younger now. What the hell did I look like then?
You do. Mary Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet's stepson, said the same thing. And she showed, you know, out of the mouth.
Well, but he's 10.
But he looked and he said, oh, what did he say, Mary? He looks better now or he looks younger now? Which
you know what
true.
Just popped up on Facebook? Jennifer Weigel. You know, your memories on Facebook?
Double Fs.
Exactly. Today, July 10th in 2013, I came on and took a picture of the two of you. And I was just looking at it in the green room. That's not green, by the way. And I was thinking the same thing. You look so much more spry today.
I do?
Spry. Yeah.
You're but spry I'm so tired. And being flanked.
I'm so tired. You know what it is? It's the buzz cut.
Is that it?
Yeah, it's the buzz cut. You know, because I was trying to hold on to hair for a long time.
Here it is. I don't need
And then
to
when
know.
I finally let hair go, yeah, I know, it's not good.
I don't even know if Seattle TV could get that.
It looks like I part my hair in the middle.
No, the buzz cut is good for you. You look like you were just out of the military.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The badass drill sergeant.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. That's your jam.
Jen Weigel, so you have a show tonight?
I do. Wilmette Theater, we have Dr. Raymond Moody, who coined the phrase near-death experience. He's a doctor.
He's the one who came up with it?
Yeah, he's the one who came up with it. In 1975,
did he die?
No, yeah, he did have a near-death experience after he wrote this book, Life After Life, in 1975. Over 13 million copies sold, by
the way. That's not bad. That's pretty good success.
Yeah, so he basically started this whole phenomenon as a doctor, wanting to research it and interviewing hundreds and hundreds of people for this book. And now since then, I'd say thousands of interviews later, he's still out there realizing that people with different backgrounds, religious backgrounds, you know, however they were raised, everything, have these through lines about their near-death experiences, and that the consciousness is not attached to the brain, it does live on. That's his belief after all these thousands of interviews.
So take me through a couple of these. Is it Hinduism that is formed by reincarnation?
You're asking the wrong person.
I think it's Hindus.
Yeah. Okay, sure. But he believes in reincarnation. He thinks we're recycled.
Okay, do we go to the light? Is there a light that we go to?
So get this. A lot of doctors believe it's lack of oxygen in the brain. That's why people have these, quote, near-death experiences. They're on meds. They're out of oxygen. They're dying on the table.
Okay.
It's trauma. But what he has found is that this is a really funny story. He told this story on Saturday. So this doctor's trying to revive a man. The guy flatlines. So they pronounce him dead. So he's like wrapping it up. The guy's dead. This woman comes barreling in, screaming hysterical. My husband's not dead. My husband's not dead. He just came to me in the lobby and told me he's not dead. Keep working on him. So the guy, the doctor, felt so bad. Okay, this crazy woman, please take her back into the lobby.
Right.
They revived. The guy did live. And the guy, when he came to, said, Doc, I was trying to yell at you. Please keep trying. It's not my time. They told me it's not my time. You wouldn't listen. So I had to go into the lobby and come to my wife and tell her to tell you.
Did she have any sort of post-traumatic stress syndrome from this?
No. And so what his point is that the wife was not under, you know, lack of oxygen. The wife was not on the table. She was not on meds. She was just waiting for her husband to find out if everything was okay. So that instance alone.
But what I'm saying is, let's say I'm flatlining.
Yeah.
And you're out in the lobby and they come to you and I come out to you and go, hey, could you swing by? Because I'm still in there flatlining and they don't seem to be paying attention.
Right.
Wouldn't that throw you a touch?
Just a smidge. Yeah. But that he's saying that there are more and more instances of the people that aren't dying or dead where they're having these visions, these apparitions. And, you know, 250 plus million people think Jesus came and rose from the dead and appeared to Mary. So, you know, is that the only time it happened?
Yeah.
So I think his whole point is that that's a little bit more far out than some of this medical research he's been doing for decades.
But what is the, not unanimous belief, what is the similarity of belief? Because, you know, we often go to children on this, right?
Right.
It's like when a little pure child, not colored by their experiences in life yet, because they don't have that many,
right,
dies and comes back from the dead.
Right. Their stories are exactly the same as well. A lot of similarities.
And so there's got to be a white light.
Well, Well, that's the thing. He says, yes, he totally agrees that there's a white, or at least the research shows, as he says, through the thousands of interviews he's done with people who've died and lived to talk about it, kids or adults, is that there is a light. It's all encompassing. It's all love. It's like there's nobody standing there with a clipboard going,
well, when would
you
I go
sucked
and
in
see...
third grade.
You couldn't climb the rope. We all made fun.
But you also have a life review where you do feel everything that you put out. So that could be either heavenly or hellacious.
So is that the Albert Brooks thing where you go into a room and Rip Torn comes in and shows you the movie of your life?
Of your life, exactly. And that's the other thing. Kids, adults, grandparents, 40-year-olds, if they've died and lived to talk about it, say that that happens.
Do you think that that happens, Jen, or does he think that that happens perhaps so they can send messages back, even if there's not a huge connection? Like a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, was in a very serious car crash. Should not be alive today. She is, thank God. She said that she saw her grandmother when she was kind of in this afterlife mode and my dad. And she was friends with my dad. She knew him, but they weren't the best of friends where they would see each other every single day. And she told me that. So do you think that they're sending messages through people?
Yeah. And in fact, a lot of the events that I've had at the Wilmette Theater where, you know, mediums are supposedly reaching out, people who are sitting next to each other's dead people are coming in together because over there it's all connected. We're all part of the same, apparently, Oriental rug.
So they're deadpooling.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but not the Ryan Reynolds deadpool. They're deadpooling. It's like carpooling, but they're deadpooling.
I like the Oriental rug analogy, too.
Exactly. We're all part of the same Oriental rug. We need the light and we need the dark and we are all connected. Whether we like to admit it or not, we're connected. Trump
what if your
and Hillary.
Tastes are different?
We are totally connected.
What if
Trump
you're not
and Hillary?
Into, what if
we're
you're
connected.
Not into Oriental rugs? What if you have a different sort of taste?
Okay, Persian rug.
Could we be the hardwood floor?
We could be the home decorator's version, whatever you want. Okay. But apparently we're all connected. So they say. And the life review is the version of heaven and hell. But the point is people can come tonight and ask Dr. Moody for themselves. He's never been to the Chicago area to Wilmette before. This is super exciting that we have him there. So come and ask your questions. Come armed with a clipboard. He'll answer anything. He's been doing this for decades. He loves it.
All right. And tickets where?
Tickets at the Wilmette Theater. You can get them at the door. There are a few left. You can definitely get some at the door if there are any left. But also just call the Wilmette Theater or go to my website, jenweigel.com/gigs.
Why don't you spell that?
Weigel, W-E-I-G-E-L, Jen, J-E-N, .com/gigs. But we want to give away a couple pair today.
All right. We'll do that 6 and make it 7 and 8. Caller 7 and 8, Dave?
And you have to be able to go tonight.
Yeah, callers. I would say caller 7 and 8.
Caller 7 and 8.
Show is at 7 p.m. tonight.
312-981-7200. You have to be able to go. You also have to want to go.
Yeah. I mean, you can
it's
come,
not just about
but
you
don't be a heckler.
Something.
I mean, I've had those people before. Honestly, I was doing a book signing for
you
my new
You call
book.
That dead!
That's like, I got a story for you. Jesus is coming after you.
Really?
Oh, I get it all the time because I'm on book tour for my new book. And people think because I've interviewed mediums
about,
and psychics and people who've, you know, researched this.
This isn't the blasphemy tour.
Well, no. No, but people don't want to think outside of their religious box. If they've been taught a certain belief system and I come around and say, hey, I have research that might show this is a little different than what you believe in, they get all scared and stuff.
See, I'm a Christian and I plan on staying that. However, I'm fascinated by the other world religions and the history of them
Completely.
As well.
Oh, that's the other thing. Historically, Socrates was writing about near-death experiences. This is like he's a philosophy major, Dr. Moody, and so he went back thousands of years to texts where this was being written about in other languages in other times. So, you know, it's been around for a while. We need to just realize that.
Can you hang for a bit?
Totally.
All right, stick around. We got to get some sound from the news weekend in here as well. We'll do that when we come back, and then more with Jen Weigel at the Wilmette Theater tonight. Plus, if you have questions about your own death and you're currently dead, certainly call in 312 or
we'll put you in a book.
Don't you think dead people should text? We're taking dead texts now at 312-981-7200. 924 in the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio and on CLTV as well on 720 WGN. Let me play a little sound for the weekend. Bush 43 White House ethics lawyer Richard Painter, now a friend of the program who was on the show just last week, was commenting on the New York Times story that Donald Trump Jr., and Kushner and Manafort all met with a Kremlin-connected Russian lawyer. And, you know, Painter is not a guy that messes around. So here is Richard Painter over the weekend.
Donald Trump Jr. And Jared Kushner were apparently both of them involved in this. And this was an effort to get opposition research
on an opponent in an American political campaign from the Russians who were known to be engaged in spying inside the United States. The Bush administration never would have tolerated this. And if this story is true, we'd have one of them, if not both of them, in custody by now. And we'd be asking them a lot of questions because this is unacceptable. This borders on treason. If it is not itself treason, in fact, it was a 10-minute meeting, is irrelevant. You can accomplish a lot by way of damaging your own country, assisting an adversary in espionage inside the United States in 10 minutes. And we need to make sure this never happens again.
I love Painter. Love him.
It's great.
Remember what I told you last week? If you asked Richard Painter what time it is, he'd go, oh, get a watch.
Right, 8 o'clock.
Get a watch.
I have to do everything
for
you.
What's your problem?
How's the weather? I don't know. Stand outside for 5 minutes. No. But he's not messing around. Former Defense Secretary Ash Carter on CNN's State of the Union yesterday. This actually will make you feel a little bit better, I think, about North Korea. Career defense specialist, former Secretary of State. Here's Ash Carter.
Is America prepared? I mean, that's what Americans want to know.
Of course. Of course. We've
America
we've been
is
at
safe
this since
from a North Korean missile that could
I personally have been at it since 1974. We have consistently improved our military capabilities. South Korea's capabilities have improved. We have deployed missile defenses, both short range and long range, consistently in advance of what we anticipate the North Koreans will be doing so that we always stay one step ahead of them. So we're very prepared, but I think it's important not to take the idea of military action on the Korean Peninsula or war lightly. And this is a situation in which we need to get North Korea and China in a corner and not put our president in a corner.
And finally, Australian reporter Chris Ullman, this went viral this weekend. He covered the G20 and has some very interesting assessments of Donald Trump on this viral video. Here's the audio from it.
There's a tendency among some hopeful souls to confuse the speeches written for Trump with the thoughts of the man himself. He did make some interesting scripted observations in Poland about defending the values of the West, and he's in a unique position. He's the one man who has the power to do something about it. But it's the unscripted Trump that's real, a man who barks out bile in 140 characters, who wastes his precious days as president at war with the West's institutions like the judiciary, independent government agencies, and the free press. He was an uneasy, lonely, awkward figure at this gathering, and you got the strong sense that some of the leaders are trying to find the best way to work around him. Donald Trump's a man who craves power because it burnishes his celebrity. To be constantly talking and talked about is all that really matters, and there is no value placed on the meaning of words, so what's said one day can be discarded the next. So what did we learn? We learned that Donald Trump has pressed fast forward on the decline of the United States as a global leader. He managed to isolate his nation, to confuse and alienate his allies, and to diminish America. He will cede that power to China and Russia, two authoritarian states that will forge a very different set of rules for the 21st century. Some will cheer the decline of America, but I think we'll miss it when it's gone. And that's the biggest threat to the values of the West, which he claims to hold so dear.
That is the sense of urgency I've been talking about since June of 2015. This is not something to be taken lightly. This is not something to let Congress, you know, just take their sweet time on. This is not something for Bob Mueller to stretch an investigation out forever. We got real serious problems and indications that we could have spies in the White House. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not raising it to movie of the week level. I'm just saying the evidence points in that direction. So you got to get after it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it sound more authentic in an Australian accent?
Yeah. Everything does. In fact, when all this happened, I told my son, I'm going to talk British because it just sounds so much better when you talk like this. Everything does.
Start talking about the new flat you moved into.
Exactly, darling. I mean, don't you like me just a little bit better now?
I don't think I could, but yes. Yes.
That's great.
We need a quick break back with a big story in just a moment, and we'll tell you where you can see Jen Weigel and friends tonight, and a bunch of dead people coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Just wrapped up the Warrior Games after a great 10-day run in the city. And it's always great to see people who are stepping up to take care of those who have fought and sacrificed the most so that we could live in this great country. And by the way, it is still great, regardless of what's happening at the top. And joining me now in studio is another example of that, Greg Jooms, Marine veteran. Thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you very much.
Where'd you serve?
Iraq, and I operated privately in Afghanistan as a contractor.
It's not easy developing an app, let alone getting an app in the app store, and then getting people to figure it out and download it and use it. But I think it's a great idea. Victor is a bridge across the military-civilian gap, trying to make life easier for men and women that come home that need some direction after the intensity of a service life, right?
Correct.
And you went through this yourself?
Yeah, so I came up with the concept myself. I was separated from the Marine Corps in 2010 and thought I had it all figured out, and turns out I didn't. I went back to my hometown of Sheboygan, Wisconsin, where I did not have a tribe, I didn't have a network, I didn't have a community. I had friends.
And you also didn't have a purpose getting up in the morning to go do what you do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for like the first 2 weeks, you feel that you're on leave. You know, it's just like, okay, I'm gonna go back to my unit and go back to training. But then like week three, week four sets in and you start to realize that, oh, my God, I don't have anything to do. And
How bad did it get? Because it got real bad. Went down some bad roads for you.
Yeah, real bad. Divorce, drug abuse, drinking, bad jobs, just couldn't figure it out.
Bad choices, also part and parcel to the fact that we take, you know, and look, it's a complicated system, but we spend all this time and money in training. If you want to just get real basic about it and break it down to money, we spend a lot of time and money in training guys like you, and then we cut you loose.
Yeah, it's a business, right? I mean, it's the military. They're not going to, as much as they should, train me to do another job that can translate outside of the military. Like, I was an infantryman. So we were the ones running combat operations on the ground. The skill set is very narrow, but there's a lot more that we did learn. I mean, for instance,
yeah, in the process of becoming an infantryman.
Yeah, absolutely. The logistics, the planning, everything that can translate to management experience, to advertising, to all these little different things. But the military doesn't tell you how to do those things differently.
How many combat missions?
400 mounted combat patrols in Iraq.
400?
Mounted combat patrols in Iraq on a 7.5 month deployment. Then
407.5 months.
Yeah, so that's like
that's multiples every day.
Correct. Yeah, we were a mobile section, so we were constantly on the road. And in our area of operation, IEDs were the most prevalent form of attack. So
I can't imagine what the whole IED thing is like, other than to say you see television shows and movies of people walking through a minefield. You're like tiptoeing in your car, tiptoeing in your truck.
Yeah, I mean, but you can't tiptoe in a car or a Humvee or a 7-ton or a tank. Because...
Is it ever out of your mind as you're driving down some of those roads?
Oh,
roads such as they are?
You're hyper-vigilant. You're hyper-vigilant because it's not like here where we have street cleaning every, you know, first Tuesday of the month. They don't clean the roads. So it's kind of like you're driving around like a potential minefield. You don't know where one could be. You don't know if that dead animal on the side of the road or that trash or that propane tank or anything. I mean, these people
are just a bump in the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because these are not smoothly paved highways.
Well, not only that, I mean, they'll use pressure plates. So it'd be electric wire between like two boards, so to speak. When you drive over it, the circuit completes and the explosive detonates. So you can't even see these things half the time. It's a little bit of stress, so to speak.
So that leads you to come home, and you guys jump in on this, and Jen, you as well. Victor is the app. Why'd you call it Victor?
So the guys I'm working with had a way better idea. The original name was ClickNet, ClickUENET, and I'm a creative person, but sometimes I just don't have it. So the tech team that I'm working with, they suggested, well, what about Victor? And I wanted the whole idea of the application and the whole brand to not remind veterans that they served in the military. I mean, a lot of veteran organizations are constantly like using brand slogans, using emblems, branches of service. It's like, all right, we're out of the military now. The idea is to go forward and not think about the past.
Transition, have a life.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're having a life after service now. So they suggested Victor, and I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of military-esque.
No, it's positive.
But
it's empowering.
It is.
Yeah.
But then they said, well, Victor's a person. Like, we want to humanize it. We want Victor to be the one that holds your hand to get you tapped in. Because when I got to my unit, 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, I wasn't alone. There was somebody that was already there that helped me find where the mail room was, which barracks rooms not to knock on at certain hours because, I mean, those are your senior Marines and, you know, hazing's a real thing sometimes. So
sure.
You don't, they're just basically showing you where and when to go and how to get there. So
Victor could be Siri. Victor could be, you know, whomever, showing, helping you find a way. A guide, a life guide.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, we'll tell you how that actually has applications in the life of somebody that comes out of the service in just a second. Stick around. The guest is Greg Jooms. 400 combat missions, which, by the way, is 400 more than I had. So, again, thank you for your service. More in a moment on 720 WGN. The guest is Greg Jooms. All right, so the Victor app, what happens when I use it? What sort of resources are there?
Right, so we focus on community, health and wellness, and career services, and also local events and activities. So you can find a doctor. We're partnered with Rush University in the Road Home program.
Very nice.
Fantastic. It's a fantastic mental health program for veterans and their families. So PTSD, TBI, military sexual trauma, family outreach, canines for vets, and they have a three-week outpatient program. So, and that's zero cost to the veteran. I mean, you can go to it. There's a VA. There might be a backlog. You may not like the doctors that you work with, but Road Home program. I mean, I've been a patient of it personally, and I think it's phenomenal.
Greg, so. Do you think the transition the programs now that are out there for vets coming back to transition back to society are better now than they were even, say, a year or two ago, even as far as like incentives for veteran-owned businesses, things like that?
I would say yes. Okay. I'd say, I mean, absolutely. We've seen like pretty good growth with the VA and the programs that are offered.
Yeah.
But it's not there yet.
Right.
I mean, we spend so much time, money, and energy into being the best in combat and war. I mean, there's think tanks in Washington that we're going to do it this way. But it seems that when we get out of the military, we kind of go back to like the old way of thinking of here, fill out this form, request for information here. You can go to this meetup or this group, but it's more of a brand issue, I see. Like, if you get out as 21-year-old, 22, and you don't want to go around and sit in a government building and sit around with a bunch of other people. I've done some classes here in Chicago for veterans getting hired or resume classes, and I'm usually the youngest person there. So, like, to me, that's a problem. And most of these guys are Desert Shield, Vietnam era. Like, they're like, we can't find a job. And they finally realize that there's resources out there. But people in my generation are kind of like, well, no one's knocked on my door yet with a job or told me to do something.
Right. How am I supposed to find them? So with Victor app, you eliminate the excuse as well.
Right. Yeah. Like, there's no excuses. You can literally
because the resources are right there.
It's right there. You can find a job. You can find a business to save money at. You can find health opportunities and events and activities. So, like, it's right there. It's kind of like your
find a community. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Kudos.
It's great to meet you, and you should be proud of yourself for doing this. I think you got something very special there.
I appreciate that.
How do we download it?
So you can visit our website, victorapp.io. And if you're a small business, we're offering free advertising for the rest of the year. So up until January 2018, if you're a small business, let us know if you're hiring. The only stipulation is you need to offer some sort of incentivized offering. So whether it's a discount, percentage off, dollar off, free beer if you order a burger, the idea is to create competition within local markets and also kind of drive down prices of goods for my community, which is the veterans, active duty service members, their dependents. But we also open our community up to not just the military. So if you're a verified veteran, you can invite up to 5 people that were critical to your military service or your veteran transition onto our platform to kind of utilize.
Which can include family, obviously.
Yeah, we want to create a larger community because we're not just focused on just the vets and the military. We need to focus on the people that were there to support them as well.
It's all about community. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
And again, victorapp.io.
Yep.
So we hope you'll take a look. Jan Weigel, Paula and Carol will be at your show tonight.
Oh, yay. We have winners.
Yes, Paula. Okay. Yes, we do.
Cool.
And who is your guest again?
Dr. Raymond Moody, who wrote the best-selling book Life After Life and coined the term near-death experience. So he's a researcher and an MD.
Tonight at the Wilmot Theater, what time?
7 p.m.
All right.
Come nice one, come you. All. Thanks for having me.
Always good to see you. All right, Bill and Wendy next, 720 WGN.